More Idaho Matters from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. The land of Owyhee County has a rich history, attracting many groups in pursuit of different opportunities over time. From mining to ranching to military use to conservation feuds, the territory is home to countless stories as well as claims, each one shaping the identity of the region and the way we view it. Which is exactly what Dr. John Beter explores in his book, Showdown in the Big Quiet, Land, Myth, and Government in the American West. He'll be holding a lecture on the history of this area this Thursday, October 26th, with Osher's Lifelong Learning Institute at Boise State University. And John is joining us now to talk more. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Gemma. It's good to be with you.
So, John, for those folks who haven't read your book yet, can you give us a brief synopsis?
You bet. Happy to. The book is really about this county and how this county exemplifies larger issues, larger events, both in the United States and beyond. So I start with just the introduction about how I first came to this. And actually, maybe we can talk a little more about it, but it was actually a trip to Spain, a trip outside of the United States that really got me going with this. Then I look at three stories, all of them connected to kind of traditional ideas of what we have in the American West, or what we think of when we think of the American West. One in mining, one in sheep herding in that area, which was very, very prominent. A third one that looks at the Indians, Native American population within that area as well. And then I talk about how those three stories added to this idea of American mythology around Western identity. In particular, the idea of the cowboy and what the cowboy symbolizes and means for us. And with that, I talk about both how that has been historically true and also mythologized to carry on a power and importance far beyond the historical reality of it. Second, then, half of the book then tells three stories about how that mythology, how that kind of characterization has played out in different scenarios. One with Claude Dallas that some of your listeners may be familiar with, a second around the Sailor Creek bombing range that you mentioned. And the last one, these are my heroes, the Owyhee Initiative, which are groups that got together to collaborate to really do what they think is best for that land, both honoring the past and preparing for the future. So there's a lot, because there's a lot of different stories, but that's what the book is about.
And John, I want to go back to something you said about what inspired the book, because you mentioned a trip to Spain. So tell us a little bit about that and how that inspired you to write this.
Yeah. So I'm 12 years old, and my father, who was actually a professor at Boise State as well, tells us that we're headed to the Basque Country in Spain to live for the year. He started one of Boise State's first studies abroad programs. And so my mother's of Basque ancestry, we were going back there. I had never traveled before, but when it was time for me to go to school, Basque was outlawed at that time. So I had to go to school in Spanish. They had the idea of putting me in fourth grade because they felt like seventh grade language, which is where I should have been at 12 years old, would have been a little too complicated. So they wanted me to get some grounding and then go on into the seventh grade. So they put me in the fourth grade. The first day we pulled up to the school, I'll never forget, it's just etched in my mind. And it was recess, and all the kids came out because they knew that the American was going to come to their school. This is a small town of about 9 or 10,000. And what happened next, just I really didn't get at the time, but when I look back on it, I realized, wow. When I came out, they all circled around me. This is maybe 10 or 20 fourth graders. They knew I was coming. And the next thing that they did, believe it or not, is start saying Americano, Americano, and then miming cowboys and Indians. Hmm. And at the time, I was just trying to make it through the day because it was a little traumatic. I didn't speak any Spanish at all. I was a foot and a half taller than any of them, and I was just trying to make my way through it. As I reflected on it later, I thought, How do they know about cowboys and Indians? How is that making their way this way, 6,000, 7,000 miles across the ocean into this small town? And what I later realized is there was one movie theater, and about 8 of the 10 movies that played there were Westerner. There were one television channel, and at least a third of it were Western-themed shows. And what I began to realize is, wow, this idea that we have in the American West of the cowboy and what it means is really have a global, it really has a global reach and a global impact. And that is in many ways what spurred me on to write the book, because I wanted to know more about how did that happen? How did it get formed? What does that really mean? What's the impact on that for us and globally?
So let's talk a little bit about that then with Oahe County, which is where you focus your book, because this is an area where there's not much population. It is known as the Big Quiet. So how did it come to be known as the Big Quiet?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's the second largest county within the state of Idaho. It's a massive space, and it actually meets the traditional frontier requirement of less than 2 people per square mile. That's very, very rare within the United States. And so in the 1880s and 1890s, Frederick Jackson Turner, a historian, said that the frontier is closed because we had relatively few areas that still had less than 2 people per square mile. One of those areas, in fact, probably the largest area within the United States with the least amount of population, is Oahe County. So, in many ways, what Turner was saying, and I think what that community has held on to, is that the idea of the rugged Westerner, kind of epitomized in the cowboy, is being played out and continues to be being played out within this vast area with very little population. It got called the Big Quiet because Ted Trueblood, who was a conservationist and really early on to the environmental cause in many ways, he dubbed it that because it really is. If you go down there, it's so vast, so large, and so quiet. We live in a busy society with horns and all kinds of noise. When you get out to the Owais, it's hard not to take a deeper breath and just absorb the silence that's around you. He dubbed it that, and I think it's pretty accurate.
Well, so even though it's named the Big Quiet, there have been numerous conflicts over the years about this land and this area. Can you talk a little bit about that and the fact that I believe one of these conflicts actually made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court?
It did. It did. Yes, the land has been contested from the very beginning. So if you look at Native American communities that were there and migrating through there, we see the tension, the discrimination, and sadly the deaths and the really the ending of that community within the area. So certainly that has been deeply contested. There's still parts of that connected to it today. There's a Native American Indian reservation nearby, Duck Valley. There are other stories that have been deeply contested as well. In the 18th century, mining claims that turned into battles. And then there's what you mentioned, and that's the other part of what got me going on this, is a Basque sheep herder that ends up in the United States Supreme Court. I had written an earlier book on the history of the Basque in Idaho, and I was trying to understand what is it. How is this Basque herder ending up in the U.S. Supreme Court? His name was Omar Chivarria, pretty kind of a mouthful. And what I found out is that really he was just stuck in between large sheep and large cattle. That is the development in very large numbers of both of these animals in this large area. And so He was named or identified it because really it was a clash of the large entities that were herding sheep and raising cattle in the area. And we know, many of us know, that in the West, the battles between sheep and cattle have been notorious, and that played out in there as well. Let me just highlight one more that I think is a little more modern and really challenges, I think, this notion of the big quiet, and that was the Sailor Creek bombing range. As we know, Mountain Home Air Force Base is close by, and the military has been looking to that, or had been looking to that, because there is relatively little population in the area, as a great bomb, a great spot for training and for dropping live ordnances. You can imagine that that was hotly contested by those within the Owyhee County. Businesses, ranchers, herders, those that were mining, all kinds of the entities that have been traditional ways of life in there, felt threatened by that. Many that were very pro-military actually ended up challenging that. They didn't want the noise and the, well, frankly, the live ordinances dropped at that area. So it's another more modern chapter of how this area, dubbed the Big Quiet, has been contended and contentious for, well, for as long as we've had it.
Why do you think that the stories of the Old West not just hold such power, but such intrigue for people even to this day?
Yeah, it's a great question. And that's really what the heart, I think what the heart of the book is really trying to get at. I think it gives a handful of things. One, in a world that feels increasingly homogenized, we're listening to the same kinds of music, we're all on the internet, we're all doing things that just feel, well, common to all. I think the romanticism of that Western identity harkens back to a different time, a time that seems less complicated, a time we have this notion, I think, of the rugged individualist, of the challenges that go with that. I think we romanticize them, but nonetheless, I feel like it does stir something within us. Myths and these kinds of stories have to be real for them to have impact. At the same time, they're inflated, they're aspirational. They give us markers of identity, even though those may not be absolutely accurate. And so we now know that this has gone far beyond the United States, that the Western movies, that these books, Frontierland in Disneyland, in fact, in Paris, where there's a Disneyland, it's the most, is the favorite spot of those that visit that park. It tugs at a romance in us. It awakens up some other notions, some that aren't, that don't seem as complicated, that seem more free, that seem more democratic in the sense that one can do what they want to do. And it's international. In Asia, you'll see karaoke with that has bowls, you know, the automatized bowls or mechanical bowls. And so what I realize is that it tugs at something within us as humans that harkens back to an earlier age, more freedom, a ruggedness, a do-it-yourself mentality, and as necessary, a coming together, a barn raising when needed. I think some of those things we deeply crave for. And these stories and the myths that grow out of them feed that. They provide that for us.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us about your book. It's been a really fascinating conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.